The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Graham, Science's online news editor, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news from our online daily news site, Science Now, including a story about a mysterious green blob in outer space. Welcome back, Dave. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Rob.
So what is this mysterious green blob in outer space? It sounds like a movie title or something.
Well, this mysterious green blob is also known as Hanes Forwarp, if I'm getting my Dutch pronunciation correct, and I'm probably not. But Forwarp means object in Dutch. And the Hanny is a Dutch school teacher who in 2007 was combing through a database of celestial objects and came across this glowing green smudge of light that's approximately 650 million light years away. And for a while, astronomers were really perplexed by this object. What is this? Is it just an artifact? Is this something we've never seen before? And so they trained a bunch of telescopes on the object. And what they concluded initially was that the object appeared to be a giant cloud of hot gas. And the reason they thought it was glowing green is because it was located not too far from a galaxy known as IC2497. And in the center of this galaxy is what's called a quasar, which is a black hole that was gobbling up stars. And as this black hole gobbled up stars, it was emitting these tremendous, highly energetic jets of hot gas and high energy radiation. And the astronomers thought that this radiation was striking this cloud of gas, and the radiation was exciting oxygen atoms in the gas, and that was causing it to turn green. But that was just preliminary speculation. Up until now, there had really been no way to confirm this hypothesis.
So now, what's happened?
So now, scientists have very detailed Hubble Space Telescope images of this object and also new X-ray observations. So they have a lot more data than they had before. And the good news is the data pretty much confirms these other hypotheses that Hanes Forwarp is this giant cloud of hot gas and indeed was being excited by these massive radiation jets from this quasar in a nearby galaxy. And I say was being excited because what the astronomers discovered with this new data set is that the nearby galaxy, the quasar is actually shut off. It's no longer emitting these tremendous jets of radiation, but the Forwarp is still glowing green. And that's because these objects, the Forwarp and the galaxy, even though they're relatively close together, are really not that close together in our terms. And it actually takes tens of thousands of years for light from the galaxy or the light from the quasar to reach this Forwarp and excite the atoms in it. So even though the quasar is shut off, the light is still traveling to the Forwarp, exciting it, and it's causing it to glow green. What that tells us not only is that the quasar was indeed responsible, but also that by their calculations, astronomers have found the quasar probably shut off about 200,000 years ago, which is a lot faster of a shutdown than researchers thought possible. So we're not only learning more about this mysterious green blob, but also more about how quasars work as well.
Are there any more mysteries then to this previously mysterious green blob?
Well, one other thing that the astronomers discovered was this cluster of young stars in the Forwarp. And they say that actually adds more evidence to this whole quasar hypothesis, because if a very energetic beam of radiation is hitting the Forwarp, it's not only causing it to glow green, but it can actually compress the gas. And when gas is compressed, it can form stars. So more evidence of this quasar hypothesis.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. So what other stories have we brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, this next story is also about studying a tricky object, but instead of a mysterious green blob, the tricky object here is the penguin. And the reason penguins are very tricky to study is because, at least to you and I, they all kind of look alike. And in the past, researchers have surmounted this problem by putting metal bands around the penguin's wings. And these bands have numbers on them, and that allows the researchers to tell one penguin from another. It allows them to track their movements and figure out, you know, where they're migrating and learn more about their behavior. But for a few decades now, researchers have been worrying that these bands could have deleterious effects on the penguins. In fact, in the 1970s, a study at a zoo showed that the bands actually hurt the penguins because when the penguins have their annual molt, their flippers swell and the bands can interfere with that. And there's been a lot of studies since then to try to figure out whether these bands are actually harmful and whether researchers should stop using them in the wild. And the studies have really come to mixed conclusions. Some have said that the bands are fine. Some have said the bands are a bad idea.
So is there any growing consensus, or is it still just two different sides? They're bad or they're good?
Well, in an effort to try to lay the controversy to rest, a French research team decided to do a very comprehensive study. And this was actually a 10-year study on a colony of king penguins that live on Possession Island, which is this 150-square-kilometer patch of land that's roughly 1,000 kilometers off the coast of Antarctica. And what the researchers did was from 1998 to 2008, they had taken 100 of these birds, and they put bands on half of them and didn't put bands on the others. Now, these researchers had another way of tracking the birds, something called RFID chips. And these are chips that are injected under the penguin's skin. And when they're excited by a radio signal, they reflect an altered signal, which the researchers can use to track the penguins. And what the researchers found was over this 10-year study period, the penguins that were banded did a lot worse than the penguins that weren't banded. Two big things stuck out. First of all, the penguins that were banded had a lower survival rate, about a 16% lower survival rate than those that weren't banded. They also arrived a lot later to their breeding grounds and took longer trips to forage for food. And both of these resulted in them producing fewer chicks, about 39% fewer chicks on average than the penguins that weren't banded.
Sounds like more is at issue than just the bands getting in the way of molting.
Well, these researchers think that the bands could actually interfere with the penguins swimming, potentially creating drag while the penguins are swimming. That would cause them to have to exert a lot more energy while they're swimming, which could make them more susceptible to starvation or disease or other problems.
Seems pretty conclusive. Get rid of the bands.
Well, it sounds pretty conclusive from this study. And what the researchers say is that the reason past studies may have achieved mixed results is penguins with the bands did fine in years where there was plenty of food. If there was a lot of food around, it didn't matter whether the penguin had a band or didn't have a band. It was really affecting them most when there was, quote unquote, normal amounts of food around or a very scarce amount of food around. So what the researchers say, if somebody was studying the effects of banding during, say, just over a 1 or 2 year period where their penguins had a lot of access to food, they may have concluded that, hey, there's no problem with bands. But it was only by studying these penguins over a 10-year period where there's years with more food than others, the researchers were able to find that, yes, over the long term, these bands are bad. Now, getting back to your question, Rob, not all researchers agree with this conclusion. One of the experts in this story says that it may depend on the species of penguin. She studies Magellanic penguins in Argentina, and she says her team hasn't observed any deleterious effects. So although the study may be the best evidence yet, it may not be enough to sway all the researchers that are currently using these bands on penguins.
Well, if these RFID tags are available, why aren't everyone just using those?
Well, the problem with the RFID tags is that they require a lot more equipment, as it were. With a band around a penguin's arm, all you have to do is be able to visualize the penguin. You can jot down the number on the penguin and follow it around. But with the RFID tags, the only way to track them is to place antennas anywhere the animal might move. So you're talking about a lot more of an infrastructure setup than you would with just sort of a simple metallic band.
So potential expense, but clearly a difference in the ease of use.
Exactly.
Okay. So last story, what's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from penguins that live off the coast of Antarctica to Antarctica itself, this last story is about the West Antarctic ice sheet and how it may melt no matter what we do in terms of curbing greenhouse gas emissions. And that could be very bad news for the coastal cities of the world.
No matter what we do, is that because we've already emitted the greenhouse gases that are going to lead to this disruption?
That's the basic idea. This new study has to do with climate modeling. This is where researchers plug a bunch of factors into a computer and try to predict the effect on climate over the next few years, 100 years, in this case, over the next 1,000 years. And what they found is they considered a very rosy scenario with greenhouse gas emissions.
Rosy in terms of?
Rosy in terms of that we would completely stop emitting greenhouse gases by the end of this century, which is very optimistic. And the idea would be by the year 2100, we've stopped emitting all greenhouse gases, or at least from man-made activities, and have completely switched to green sources of energy. Now, that's a very optimistic scenario, but even under that optimistic scenario, the researchers found that carbon dioxide levels, which is one of the main greenhouse gases, remain elevated in the atmosphere. And that's because even when we stop emitting, the oceans are very slow to absorb this carbon dioxide. It takes a really long time. And also, right now, we're relying on ecosystems, terrestrial ecosystems, to soak up a lot of the CO2, but they can't soak up all of it. And in fact, according to the model, after about the year 2200, they're going to start releasing some of these gases that they've soaked up. All this together means that carbon dioxide levels are going to remain very elevated for the next 9 centuries. So we're talking about, you know, almost to the year 3000. Now, the big question is, what is that going to do to rising sea levels? We worry about rising sea levels because of coastal cities, obviously flooding cities like New York and Hong Kong and Sydney. And the reason sea levels have been rising up until now because land-based masses of ice like glaciers are melting and that water flows into the ocean, rising sea levels. Also, heat itself causes water to expand and that can also raise water levels. But one thing that scientists have thought was maybe not immune to this process, but weren't as concerned about were these giant ice sheets like the West Antarctic ice sheet. And this is a, you know, enormous mass of ice that covers a large portion of Antarctica. But the scientists say that because of this elevated carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and because it's going to persist for so long, it's going to warm the waters for a very long time and not only warm the surface waters, but actually warm the waters at depth. And that could cause even something like the West Antarctic ice sheet to begin melting, which could have huge impacts on the oceans. Water levels could rise as much as 4 meters, which would completely swamp many coastal cities.
So are these modelers just pointing this out as a kind of, okay, we need to do something now, or do they have another objective in mind, say, an argument for geoengineering?
Well, it's not a very hopeful study, is it? You know, it's basically saying that no matter what we do, the oceans are really going to suffer, and they don't really propose a solution. But obviously, geoengineering has been bandied about as a way to potentially slow or even reverse the effects of global warming. But studies like this just show how bad it's gotten that, you know, in many ways, we've sort of passed the turning point of being able to effectively deal with the impact of all of the man-made pollution over the last few centuries. And in some respects, it may be too late for things that we're concerned about. And in this case, especially rising sea levels.
At least according to this team's model.
Exactly.
Are other modelers convinced by this study?
Well, at least one expert, the expert that's quoted in this article, thinks it's a strong study and says it's just more evidence that, you know, long after we stop burning fossil fuels, Earth is still going to feel the effects.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
What other stories are you looking into for the site?
Well, Rob, speaking of climate change, we've got a story about how climate variations may have been linked to seminal events in European history, including the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. Also a story about a new way to distinguish cancer cells from non-cancerous cells and what implications that may have for cancer therapy. And for Science Insider Science's policy blog, we've got a story about a new report that's come out about the oil spill, the giant oil spill that occurred in the Gulf of Mexico last year, and how the report writers are arguing for a larger role for scientists in shaping U.S. environmental policy decisions. And also a story about the search for the elusive God particle. This is the Higgs boson, the particle that's supposed to solve many riddles of physics. It turns out that U.S. efforts to find this may be ending very soon, leaving it to the Europeans to pick up the slack. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news, plus all the stories on the science policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.